Alright, this is Pure Decking Show 15 for, what the fuck is today? May 17th, 2013, yep. Right. Anyways, so, wait a minute. I just realized these things might get archived and somebody might actually listen to the thing in 2013. It's 2011, bad joke, I'm sorry. it's May 17th, 1976. I used to work, years ago I worked in a grocery store. And whenever somebody was going to write you a check, they would always ask you the date. And at first, you know, of course, me being me, I'd always say something stupid like, oh, it's February 32nd. I'm just, you know, see if anybody would write that shit down. And, you know, everybody looks at you funny when you say a funny date. And they go, yeah, funny, haha, what is today? So then I started the joke of giving the correct month and the correct day and then giving some crazy-ass year. And
okay.
That was really funny because, you know, you're giving them the information they need, and obviously everybody knows the year unless it's like January, in which case everybody's always scribbling out last year's and writing the correct year anyways. But I did get handed a check one time that was dated for June 18th, 1976. Because I said that, and the guy wrote the year, and
well,
I had to
go. Sometimes people just aren't paying attention and...
I'm sorry. I had a bit of a joke at your expense. I didn't think you would write 1976 on your check. And he looked at it, and he looked at me, and he looked at it again. Oh! It took him a full 30 seconds to figure it out. I mean, looking back and forth at the check and trying to figure out what was wrong with it. And even after I said, you know, I'm sorry, I had a bit of a joke at your expense about the date. And he looked at it, and it took him a minute. It really did. And the funny part is, this guy did not look old enough to have been alive and writing checks, you know, in 1976. So
yeah.
There's no way. I mean, unless you're high or something, I guess. I don't know. But, yeah, just in case you haven't noticed, you know, despite the crazy story at the beginning there, we have Suave and Heavy Metal, I guess.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey.
So, yeah, I'm kind of in a rush here to get going with the show. I'm starting to get used to this summer weather. I went on summer hours at work, so I'm getting out about an hour and a half earlier than I'm used to. And, Didn't stay late at work. I usually end up working over, but today I didn't because I had a bit of an adventure, and I'll go into that here in just a minute. But when I got home, I started taking care of my lawn, and you know, I get done with that, and I start cleaning some stuff up because I'm still working on the lab, and I was going to move a table from the garage in there so I'd have some more table space. So I'm sitting there cleaning that, getting all the cobwebs and shit off of it, and I look at my watch, and I'm like, oh, God, I'm on the air in 15 minutes. So, yeah, so I don't have, you know, and I've just kind of got the quick Google hits here for news stuff if we want to talk about that. Of course, I've got some other, I've got a bunch of other stuff we're going to talk about, but, you know, if you've guys got
I've
any,
got,
go ahead, Abby.
A thing on potentially just talking about the the adventure that I've been having here with the tethering and doing the mobile broadcasting and tell anybody that's got Sprint and that live in Michigan, turn that fucker on, the 4G modem, because we're supposed to get lit up anytime in the midsummer.
So, well, okay, go into what you're talking about here, because I know you're doing your newsreel show. You've been doing I Have Nothing, and of course you're occasionally on Pure Decking.
Yeah.
And so you've been doing all this from your Android phone lately.
Lately, yeah. Basically what I'm doing, initially I started doing the Pure Decking and, well, the newsreel is on the weekend and I'm at home for that, so I have full internet. But during the Pure Decking, I've been doing it on my Android phone. Essentially, there's Skype on there. You can make full Skype calls. And if you have Wi-Fi, you can actually make standard landline calls. And so essentially, I've been doing that. There's a bit of a delay, and occasionally the quality is low because I'm fuzzy because I'm using my Bluetooth headset. But I got tired of that. I basically brought my desktop home or to my home away from home, as it were, the place I'm house sitting, and I'm tethering. So I have half a megabit per second. So you know, it's basically 500 or 50K.
50 kilobytes.
Like 30K
yeah.
Up.
Yeah. And you're
50K
so you're
down,
tethering
30K
your
up.
Laptop now.
Tethering to my full desktop.
And to be fair, like that's not too bad. I remember less than 10 years ago, I had high speed internet, and it was actually about 35 kilobytes.
Well, hell, up until recently, my DSL was about that fast. So I mean,
yeah,
you know, but I'm tired of that. Now,
at some
go ahead.
Point to this summer, I will have WiMAX, which because I use Sprint, I'll have your 4G, and supposedly I'll be able to get bumped up to like 2 to 3 megabit down and like one up.
Mm-hmm.
So. Well, that'll be acceptable.
Now, that gets me thinking, though, on the mobile broadcasting thing. Skype might not be the best solution. Now, you all know what I've been doing is I made an adapter. Actually, I chopped a Apple headset since I had a spare one and soldered a couple of jacks on the end of it so I can actually use a nice headset with both my phone, you know, my full-on. I've got a Razer PC headset, and it's very comfortable. And the mic on the headset's actually pretty good. It's not what I use when I'm on shows, but just for Skyping and chatting with you guys, I mean, for example, the microphone, and it's pretty good. And I'll hook that up to my iPad, and, well, can you all even tell when I'm using the pad and when I'm not?
No, not really. There's a little bit of a difference, but not much.
Well, there's usually background noise or something, because if I'm on the pad, I'm usually doing something or...
Oh, it seems like the iPad compresses your voice a little bit more or something along those lines. I'm guessing that the Skype app for that actually...
It's probably a little bit more conservative on its usage of bandwidth. But I don't know if... Is there a Mumble client for the Android stuff? Because I haven't looked for iOS.
Yep.
I
have mumbled in on the Android client.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah.
It works quite well. You just, once again, run into a bit of a delay.
I was just thinking, because my Mumble server, at least when we've been using it for IHN, has had better sound quality than Skype, and more than once I've been thinking we ought to move Pure Decking over to it as opposed to using Skype.
Right.
And if we do that...
I'm not opposed to it.
I'm not. It's my show, and I'm thinking of doing it. So, I mean, it's like, if I say we're going to do it, we're going to do it.
No, I'm just you know, I'm just saying that's not a bad idea at all. I think that's, you know, there's no objection that I can think of.
I think the sound quality is better.
You know, you set up time and effort.
I certainly think the sound quality is better, but, having to launch the whole Second Life client there to... Well, I don't suppose we have to do that. We could just use Mumble clients, but...
I have. I mean, on occasion.
I was just thinking I need to look and see if there's a Mumble client for my iOS devices. And if there's not, I got a netbook, no big deal. But I was just thinking that would be the way to do it.
Yeah.
Especially for mobile broadcasting, because then we're using my server, and that seems to be a lot more stable than Skype.
Yeah.
So, anyways, though...
Yep.
Again, no soundboard this show. I haven't. I've been redoing the lab. I haven't got it hooked back up, and it's sitting in here. But I just don't. I can't find my USB hub, and I'm out of USB ports on this laptop. So until I can get some more ports, I can't hook up my grid of arcade buttons. And whereas I can trigger soundboard stuff with the mouse, it's just not. It's just not the same, man. It's just not the same. I've got to have my buttons.
Yeah,
so, fair enough.
Right.
Until I find my USB hub, I'm just going to go sans soundboard. And I think a few people appreciate that for some reason. I'm not sure why. So, no, I don't
know.
Well,
I mean, you know, come on. You really just, you're moving into Adam Curry territory at some point.
Oh, I'm not that bad.
Good.
I'm not that bad. Oh, man, I can't stand him. You want to know the truth? I mean, I do listen to his No Agenda show. But honest to God, I cannot stand Adam Curry. I wish there was somebody else that covered the same news stuff and had some of the same ideas. But I mean, he's got good content. But good God, he is.
I don't mind John Dvorak. He's decent. I love the curmudgeon part of him. But you're right. I would love to see a different co-host.
I mean, it's a good show. It's just Curry is so damn hard to listen to. He really is. And, even Dvorak's been getting on him lately. He was like, would you quit stepping on the clips? You know, why don't you just play them? And he actually, you know, yelled at Dvorak on the show for that. And it's just like, dude, I understand you like to hear yourself talk. I can relate, but that's...
Yeah. Actually, I'll tell you what. If you want to listen to what I consider to be the epitome of broadcast quality podcasting, which means they've run it through a compressor, so it sounds like it's coming over the radio, but it's called, it's just to get the idea of good audio quality, it's called The Sunday Session. And you go to thebrewingnetwork.com, and it's The Sunday Session, and they basically talk about beer, homebrewing, and basically have different actual brewers on, and their quality, they all come from radio background, is just amazing. But I've also seen their setup, and they're running on shit like we are. They're basically running on, homemade rigs and, whatever headphones or microphone setup they can get. And it's pretty decent quality stuff. But listen to it. I mean, it's decent production work. Everybody contributes a little bit to it. And I think that's something we can aspire to. But they've been doing it for 5 years, too, so that's kind of nifty.
Actually, my mixer, my microphone has a bit of compression put into it because the mixer I'm using, I've got a nice high-end Yamaha mixer now, and it's got a built-in compressor. But it only does it for my microphone, and then I could put channel 2 through it, so I could put the Skype stuff through a compressor, but when I was playing with that, it sounded horrible, because I think Skype does some stuff on its own anyway, so I didn't want to mess with that too much. So it's working, and I didn't want to mess with the setup that much, but that's something on the Mumble client, is I think Mumble does some stuff to clean up the audio as well. Which is why I'm thinking we might want to move off Skype and onto it, especially because we don't know what Microsoft is going to do with Skype other than throw more ads on it. So,
right.
That's a consideration.
I don't think we'd see any difference on our end, really.
They'll start tracking everything. Well, no, that'd be if Google bought it. I don't know. So, anyways,
Everybody's
is my microphone a little loud?
Though. It's kind of funny. Nope, you're good.
I'm good.
I don't know what your recording's showing, but
it looks like I'm peaking. That's why I'm asking. Turn it down just a hair. Okay, is that too much? I'm not peaking.
Remember Skype changes it.
Yeah. So what you all are hearing is not what's going into the recording box, anyways. So
yeah.
Anyway, right. That looks better now. I'm not blowing it out. So, anyways. So
your stories.
Before we go into that, I thought I would start off with a quick review of a Linux distro. I thought about doing full-on Linux distro reviews, but so many people do that for the big distros. If I'm going to do them, it's just going to be for shit nobody's heard about, basically. Because I don't want to do yet another review of the latest Ubuntu, where everybody hates the new desktop interface or whatever. But I'm not fond of it. I've been using it at work, and I blew it away today and put Backtrack 5 on that box and did the KDE interface. And you know, with the way they've simplified down the KDE interface, I'm really liking it. Maybe it's just the latest version of KDE 4 cleaned up some of the problems I was having with it, but it's. I think I'm going to go straight on KDE from now on.
Yeah, that's good.
So, but that said, go ahead.
I was gonna say that what's up with this new distro?
It's not new, but it's one I hadn't heard about until very recently, and it's called I'm totally blanking on the name. I'm gonna stall here while I find my ISO. But it's a really well done distro. It's
excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I
it's
I've
called
played
Tails.
Around with quite a few of tiny. Linux basically to run different machines.
Yeah.
I'm up for that. I actually do like the light stuff.
This is not. It's not light. But what it is, it's based on Debian, and it has a GNOME desktop, GNOME 2.
All right.
And it's put out by the people who do Tor. It's called Tails. And it is not intended to be installed on your hard drive. It's not meant to be like a desktop Linux. It is meant to be used as a live CD or thumb drive. And what it does is it creates an environment that is forensically sound, and it shoves all of your traffic through Tor. Now, I did some experimenting with this distro, and it does all kinds of crazy stuff. It detected that it was running in a virtual machine and threw a fit. I mean, it had all these warnings all over it. You are running in a virtual machine. The host of this machine can see what you're doing. because it's totally about privacy. It's a standard issue Debian-based desktop, right? I mean, you get Firefox, you get GNOME, you get it looks just like the desktop you would get if you did a Debian Live CD off the shelf. Except as soon as it comes up, it runs in this... I'm blanking on the package name, but essentially there's a way of running the Linux kernel where you run kind of a micro kernel, then you run the kernel, and that's done so that you can actually update the kernel on a running machine without having to reboot it. And so they use this mode, except they're using it for security. And when you shut the machine down, it jumps out of the full kernel and goes back into this micro kernel and starts scrambling what's in memory. So somebody couldn't get a RAM image from, like, you know, the cold boot attack, like they were talking about a year back. But it writes it doesn't touch a hard drive. It will not do that. And everything on the network goes over Tor. And I checked everything. Well, I didn't try to break out of anything. I just kind of used it in its default running mode. As soon as it comes up, it dumps you into the desktop, and it's, I'm trying to remember now, the username was really funny, and I'm kind of forgetting what it was. It was a few days ago that I played with the distro, which is why I'm having trouble remembering some of this stuff. I've been really busy since then. But, Amnesia. The username was Amnesia. And it was, it doesn't, you know, of course, it doesn't write anything out to any drives. It makes a point not to, actually. And like I said, everything, even shit like on the terminal, it shoves everything through Tor. Now that means it's a little slower, but like, and like I said, it even complained that it was running in a VM, so it's doing all kinds of detection, and it's all about privacy. It's all about being able to get online and use the internet,
cool,
and not have anything you do be tracked.
That's pretty epic.
It's not bad, and I can think of a lot of uses for this thing. Some of them not so good, but say, oh yeah, let me just go in this library here and boot this up on a machine I don't own, and now I'll just start dropping my malware out on the internet, and good luck tracking that shit. Because the only way to do forensics on this kind of thing would be to get a dump of the memory from the machine while it's still running.
Right.
So you'd have to get the machine away from, like, if you wanted to do forensics on it, you would have to get the machine away from the person and get a dump of its RAM. That's it.
Yeah, no shit. And all it would take is like a second to pull the flash drive out.
Well,
I mean,
they're working on a new version of it that, like, if you've got it running a flash drive or a CD, that if you hit the eject or yank the flash drive, it's going to use a UDEV rule to detect that and start scrambling the memory.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, they're really serious about it. Now, obviously, you know, for me in the States, you in Canada, Suave, there's not a terrible need for this kind of thing, really. I mean, it's easy enough to take any old live CD and go to, you know.
Yeah, and really when it comes down to it, I don't have any reason to need it. However, I wouldn't mind getting my hands on a copy of it just in case things do go to shit, especially with the...
If you go to the Tor project, you know, you just Google Tor, and you go to the Tor project and you go to their projects page, you'll see Tails Live CD on there. It's really... And actually, their server's pretty good. When I pulled it down, their HTTP download came in like 10 minutes for a full live disk. So, I mean, that was...
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, it's really good stuff. And, I mean, you got to give the Tor guys credit. They did it right. It's, you know, for us, not so much, but, say, political dissidents in places like the Middle East, Syria, you know, when all the Egyptian shit was going down, Iran, I can think
of
a lot of
places. Actually, in the United States, too, I actually, there's, if you look at, what is it, Sacred Horror or Virtual, or Melissa Gira, she was actually a prostitute. She used the Tor network as a way to actually get clients.
Oh, okay.
Well, I was trying to make the point that there are legitimate and good reasons to have stuff like this. But, you know, prostitution's a good one, too. So if you're a hooker and you're wanting to...
To be fair, if, you know, if this woman's working for herself and... you know, she's not getting exploited or anything like that. I see no problems with it.
Oh, no, I mean, I think
I think that's a perfectly legitimate use.
I mean, I keep a 500 gigabyte hard drive encrypted.
I would just say that's an actual use case that, that really has happened, and, you know, she really did actually, you know, write about it on her website, and it, she, you know, retired, so it's kind of a nice thing to go, you know, go look at it and see what somebody who actually used Tor for, you know, business purposes.
Here's a very good and legit thing. Let's say you had, you know, let's say you were going to do the whistleblower thing. You know, you were going to, you know, you were going to send something to WikiLeaks. I don't much care for Julian Assange, but I'm okay with WikiLeaks as an organization. Assange just said some wacky shit. But anyways, let's say you had something and you had to get it out because it was a leak of, I don't know, whatever. And, you know, make something up, go for the overly dramatic, make up your mind. I don't care. But if you really needed to get that shit posted, this CD would be the way to do it. Because, you know, you go someplace like a, you know, like a library, like a school, someplace that's got a machine, or hell, just borrow a laptop at a Starbucks and boot up this disk, right?
Right.
Plug in your flash drive, upload your shit, and, you know, send it, you know, WikiLeaks or, you know, Blogger or wherever the hell you're sending your stuff and you don't want to be tracked. Then when you're done, toss the disk in the garbage, break the thumb drive in half or throw it in a microwave, and hey, good luck tracking that shit.
Actually, you know what's kind of interesting? There is a, let's see, a Staples right next to, well, in my hometown, right next to the Starbucks. So you get the free Wi-Fi and you just go in there into the demo machine and boot it up.
Perfect. Yeah, I mean, you know, there's, if you just look, there's plenty of ways to do this stuff, and I can see a lot of instances. Now, let's say you were doing something that wasn't quite on the up and up, and but you wanted to borrow somebody's machine to do it. This would be a way to do it and not leave anything on their machine. See, this is cool, too, because if you're going to do something on, not on the up and up, this lets you do it without leaving traces on a machine so that somebody else doesn't get blamed for your bullshit.
Right.
So...
yeah, it's true.
You know, it's a way to not leave trails laying around. So, you know, it's really, like anything, it's a tool.
Yeah. You know, I'm still a little wary of the Tor network, though, just because any nodes that you're connecting to basically get a full view of what's going on, don't they?
No. The node you connect to, the okay, we get to explain onion routing. Okay. every Tor node has a... you know about public and private crypto, right? You know, you've got your public key and your private key, and anything encrypted with the public key can only be decrypted with the private key, and vice versa. So every Tor node has, you know, a public and a private key pair, and the public key is in the Tor servers. So you know, you pull them down whenever you sync up. And you can bounce through as many nodes as you want. 5 is usually a good number. 3 if you're worried about your latency. And, you know, just remember, these things are usually donated. So pumping BitTorrent through them is a bad idea because that slows them down like nobody's business. But, you know, and it's not their intended purpose. And if you ask anybody who runs Tor servers, they're like, no, please don't do file sharing through it because, you know, that's more likely to get them shut down. Same thing with, like, kiddie porn and shit.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah, if you're looking at kiddie porn, you deserve to have your head taken off with a weed whacker. But that aside, if you're doing it through Tor, sure, you're not going to get caught, but you're probably going to get the people running the Tor node in all kinds of trouble. So, you know, just don't be a buddy fucker. Think of the children. No, don't think of the... stop thinking of the children like that. Dear God, stop thinking of the children like that. That's not right. Anyways, where was I? Onion routing, right. So anyways, the way it works is you'll pick your path, you know, how you're going to go from your machine through the Tor network and then out on the public internet.
Right.
And every packet you send, you'll wrap in layers of encryption. Now, of course, this is all happening in the background. You're not doing this. The software is doing this.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you, like, let's say you're using 5 servers. So you'll take your initial packet, and it will be encrypted 5 times using the public keys of your 5 servers.
Okay.
So that what will happen is, and of course, you know, it's done in very specific order. The 5th server is the first layer of encryption. The 4th server is the second layer, and so on. Mm-hmm. So that when you send it to that next server, what it's going to do is it's going to use its private key, and it's going to pull that first layer of encryption off, like the layers of an onion, since that's where they get the name onion routing.
Right.
The only thing it can see when you unwrap it is that it's supposed to go to the next node. You know, so it knows where that packet came from and then what the next node is supposed to be, but it doesn't know what's in it, and it doesn't know how many more nodes it's supposed to go to, just, you know, the next node it's supposed to go to. And so it then goes through all of its nodes until you get to the last node, the exit node. At that point, that one can see the content of the packet and where it's going on the internet.
Right.
And but it only knows the last node it came from. It doesn't know who sent it. Now, that's what the Tor network does. Now, you have to take into account, like, let's say you're doing email through Tor.
Yeah.
Now, if you're using, you know, your bob.smith@gmail.com through Tor, guess what? The exit node can probably figure out that you're Bob Smith and you're using Gmail and see what you're doing. And, yes, several government organizations and security companies and nosy individuals run Tor nodes specifically so they can watch the exit traffic and watch for that kind of stuff.
Right.
So it's not just a matter of, oh, I'm using Tor, I'm fine. No, but Tor has a nice side effect of getting around filtering, because all the local filters can see is the encrypted packets going out to one server.
Right.
So unless they've blacklisted all the Tor nodes, which is actually not that hard to do, because you can get a list of them from the Tor project. I mean, they don't hide the servers.
Right.
Because they're not trying to they're not really trying to be a dark net. They're just trying to they provide network
anonymity.
It's network anonymity. It doesn't prove any it doesn't do anything to prevent what you're doing from giving you away. So, you know, if you go on Twitter and you're posting your location and your name, just because you're going through Tor doesn't mean shit. So you've got to watch what you're doing. It's like, if you're going through Tor, they're not tracking your packets back to that machine, but it doesn't matter if you're on your Facebook page, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So.
Now, I can see an issue coming up where you've got sites like, Google that tracks all these different metrics from your box.
Sure.
You know, if you're using sites like this, I could see that information getting sent through and getting to the exit node and possibly being identified via this information.
That's another reason why something like this live CD is such a good idea, because you know it's a clean environment. You know it's not full of malware that's pumping out your location. You know it's not, you know, got all these tracking cookies and stuff in it. And, of course, if it even any tracking cookies it picks up while you're using it, one reboot and they're gone.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not – this is not meant to be like your daily browsing environment. This is like, you know, the data has to get out, and if the government –
Say you're in China and you found out something really scary about the government and you need to get that information out there, that'd be the way to do it.
Right, exactly. So, Tor is useful for a lot of things. If you're just trying to get around local filtering – just set it to one hop, because you're not really worried about your anonymity at that point anyways.
Yeah.
But, you know, if the data has to get out, if you've got to make that post to WikiLeaks, you know, something like this live CD is the way to go.
Yeah.
But again, you know, it's like you said, if you're, you know, if you say, and this has happened, by the way, people have gotten caught using Tor because they had an instant messenger set to automatically sign them in, like their ICQ.
Oh, jeez.
So, well, and your IM, I mean, sure, your username and password might be encrypted, but after that, it's all clear text, right? So,
exactly.
You know, the moment somebody sees you online and shoots you a message, well, that data stream has been identified, and people have gotten caught because their instant messenger signed them on through Tor. The other thing you gotta watch with Tor, especially when you're just using, like, the Tor button in Firefox... sometimes, it depends on your setup, sometimes your DNS traffic will not go through the Tor network. It'll go through, because it's your OS doing that, it'll just go out unencrypted. So a lot of people get caught trying to get around filtering by using like SSH tunnels and stuff.
Right.
And or just basic proxy servers, but their DNS traffic is still going out in the clear as if they weren't.
Right.
And this is one of the things I was checking
for.
Can
you do that, fix that by using OpenDNS and then encrypting that through them?
Yes. If you're using a different DNS server and you've got it encrypted through a tunnel, or you just make sure your DNS traffic goes through the tunnel. I'm just saying you've got to be careful when you're doing this kind of stuff, because if you don't know how to set up these kind of tunnels, you got to watch and see what's leaking. And that's actually what I was checking. And, you know, when I ran it in the VM, I just watched all the data coming out of it on the main box, right?
Right.
And everything was going out to Tor.
Yeah.
I mean, everything. I brought up the console and started pinging boxes. That was going through Tor. So they set it up right, is my point. So their live CD, if you need to do this kind of thing, is a good way to go.
Right.
And I was really impressed with it, because, like I said, it didn't leak. Now, I didn't really sit there and hammer on it, because I haven't had a lot of time lately. But so far, I mean, just from a cursory glance, it looks like they're doing it right. So
that's excellent.
Yeah. So we're a little over time here. We're ready to go into break, I think. So I'm just going to play that Tron mix I got from Fantastic Power. I think that fits. So let me...
Yep.
BSV has sent me a random IP address. I'm not really sure why.
It's fun.
That's probably
you want to read it out loud to the
or something. But I mean, it's just we're sitting here talking about network tracking and Tor and all this, and then there's a random IP address from BSV. Right.
Yeah, he would like you to openly attack that immediately, all three of you. Thank you.
Hey, are you? So
morning,
I'm gonna mute. I'm gonna mute the call. We're gonna go into break here. So here we go.
All right, welcome back to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie, and back to you, Morps.
Wait, what?
I'm pretty sure that they play that song as like fade out music on Coast to Coast AM.
Really?
I'm Dude, pretty that sure.
That was the funniest shit ever.
That was good. I mean, I didn't know they'd been playing that on Coast to Coast. I haven't listened to Coast in years.
Yeah, well, same here. I just remember hearing that song from Coast to Coast AM.
The date on this thing is 4/9/10, and it's marked as unfinished. So,
oh well, maybe they've remixed something or something like that.
But, I got that from Fantastic Power. I didn't get it from Coast to Coast AM, but I like the song. So,
yeah, for sure.
I think we can use it on here. You know, that's the thing. With the last Backtrack release, Infected Mushroom put out several of their tracks for free.
Oh, nice!
To promote the release, and they're good tracks. And it's like I want to use them. And I don't think I can, because it's, you know, just because they put them out for free doesn't mean that they're,
yeah, you
know,
can re-broadcast.
Free. So I don't know.
Yeah,
if I can do that.
Say Creative Commons.
Truthfully, I don't think anybody would notice. I could probably play all kinds of. We could do like Rant Radio's plays all kinds of shit they're not supposed to play. Nobody calls them on it, so I don't know if we could get away.
Oh yeah,
or not.
That's because to be honest, Rant Radio has what maybe 300 listeners.
Maybe. So I don't know. Yeah. I don't want to. I'd rather not risk it. To be honest, to get enough of those damn letters at work.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But anyways,
so I made a guess while we were on break with Suave, and my guess was you're doing reformatting all the machines at work and deploying new systems and stuff because it's after the end of semester.
Several of them, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I figured. I had to do the same shit.
Yeah, that's part of what we're doing. We're dealing with a. I'm not sure if I should say the name of the software on air or not. We're dealing with some systems.
Well, no, don't worry about that. But it's basically this is standard for most colleges and universities. It's just the usual clean up all the crap off the machines and fix any hardware damage that happened during the year and deploying new software that professors or the staff decided that they wanted.
There's that. Learning well, they're deploying this large scale enterprise system management software, and I kind of broke into the server in like 5 minutes flat, and it was like, guys, this is a problem. And they're like, wow, you're really good. I'm like, thank you, but actually, no, this wasn't me being good. This was really shitty setup, and they're not. So I kind of got a reputation now. Like, it's like, man, he broke into that server in 5 minutes flat, and it's just like, no, gosh, this is the problem. Is not like it's not me. It was that the server was not configured right. What the fuck? Come on. And So
that means you have to do it.
Pretty much. Well, suddenly I was in every meeting regarding that server from then on out, and it was just like, damn it.
Oh, yes, that's your life from now on, dude. You realize that they will bump you up to your area of least competence, and then you will be stuck there forever.
No, that's not the problem. It's just every time I point out a problem with something, suddenly I'm involved in every aspect of it, and it's just like I don't have time for this bullshit. I've got to review about 30 other things here. So anyways, enough bitching.
Yes.
Another fun review, and Heavy, you'll know where this came from. I just finished reading up Zero Day. What was the author's name on that? I'm blanking on it. It's like a Sys Internals guy wrote it. And I have to listen to Security Now because those are the topics that I'm going to get asked about by not my boss, but his boss. And
was
I'm sure I've made it clear before, I'm not a terribly big fan of Security Now, but he hits the mainstream security stuff. And it's the stuff I'm going to be asked about, so I kind of have to listen to it.
Was that written by Mark Rashinovich?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's him. And it's okay. It's not. It's kind of in that. I mean, a ton of authors do this. It's. I always think of it as the Stephen King style because he was the first one I really read anything that was done in that style of lots. The book's not terribly long, but there's like 60 chapters because each one's like 2 pages long. You know that style I'm talking about, where it's a whole bunch of really short chapters?
Mm-hmm.
So I always think of Stephen King, because he was the first one I saw really doing that heavy. And I know not all of his books are that way, but several of them are. But anyways, so I know a ton of authors do that, but it's written in that style, and it's... I'm trying to think of how I can discuss it without doing spoilers, because I know some people might be reading it or want to read it.
Yeah, it looks pretty good. I've never really... I know you've mentioned it before, but I haven't actually looked it up yet. It looks like it's right up my alley. I love these near future or present day kind of cyberpunk type deals.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a cyber-based thriller, but it's... It kind of pushes it, and it kind of doesn't. I mean, you can kind of see...
How accurate were they in their technological descriptions?
Oh, they're real accurate, but the actual number of descriptions is lacking for the author. I was expecting more technical detail.
Right.
The one thing he does in the book that just ticks me off to no end is the way everyone types when they're in chat rooms. It's like most people don't do that shit. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was worse than leet speak. It was like all the vowels were missing.
Oh,
and it's just like most.
So it was somebody trying to write in leet speak who doesn't actually know leet speak.
Yeah, that's a pretty good example. And so, I mean, it's like I could read it because I know several people who do that kind of stuff when they're texting. Mm-hmm. But the reason you do that when you're texting is because you're limited to 140 characters, and most phones are a bitch to type on. You don't have to do that in chat rooms because you have a full keyboard.
But back in the day when we were telnetting into shit, too, you know, you had to wait for character buffers to run. Yeah, you were going to type a lot more efficiently, too. So there's a reason for that shit.
Well, sure. Nowadays, I mean, you know, a lot of people would, you know, use short abbreviations and shortening of stuff. But, I mean, some of this stuff was like, you know, you had to read it five or six times to figure it out. And it's just like nobody types like that. Nobody.
Yeah, like, hell, you could be running your internet through ham radio and still not have to type like that.
Yeah, but when we were doing the old 400 baud modems, things were pretty rough.
Oh no, but I'm just saying nowadays, like there's no reason for it.
Hardcore leet speak is easier to read than that shit. I mean, I'll just you know, throw that out there.
And then for any aspiring author out there, there are dictionaries on the internet. Google is your friend.
Urban Dictionary, man. If you want to sound like you know what the fuck you're talking about, even when you don't, just use Urban Dictionary.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
You know, and just whatever you do, for the love of God, don't look up the definition of the hoagie guy. That's a reference that very few people will get. Don't worry about it.
Oh, now I need to look it up.
Yeah, you don't, you're going to wish you didn't. Anyways. So I'm just waiting for Swab to go, oh!
Yeah, that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yep, there it is. Anyways. it's not bad.
Yes.
It's a good read. I mean, I finished it quickly. I will say that. It does kind of keep you going, keep you reading. But near the end of it there, you're sitting there going, uh-huh. It's not that his tech is off. His tech is perfectly accurate. It's the rest of it was like a bad spy movie, and it's just like not bad. Okay, let me rephrase. I'm sitting there making that noise, but the book itself is not bad. It is worth reading, but it's not on the level of, say, Demon.
Right.
So
yeah, and that's what I was hoping for. You know, it sounds to me it's more like just your standard thriller that just happens to have a virus in it.
Well, there's a lot more. Yeah, it's kind of a mix between a thriller and a mystery,
right?
And it's, you know, for me reading it, it was pretty good because I kind of knew what he was talking about. Mm-hmm. I could see somebody who wasn't really heavy into computers and network security sitting there going, "Huh?" It's like they're worried about what? I mean.
Right.
So yeah, and it wasn't as cool as you know, somebody walking around, you know, that had basically, after they died, created a human botnet. You know, it's
yeah, it wasn't quite on the level of creativity as Demon. It wasn't bad. It was a good read. It was kind of idolized. The characters, you know, it had the perfect characters. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the characters were a little too perfect, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So, and you know, I mean, some of it was pretty good. Some of it was spot on. Some of it was like, really. It's like when you get to the end of it, you're just going, really? That's what it was. So, at least for me.
Oh well.
I could see somebody else maybe getting more out of it, but it was kind of. It was pretty mainstream. How about that?
Right.
So, looking at it from a different point of view, if you had the oogie boogie fear of technology in general, just that, you know, innate, I don't trust it.
Oh yeah, it'd make you shit your pants.
Would it be better? Yeah.
Yeah, it'd make you shit your pants if you didn't know what was going on.
Was it a very realistic scenario?
Yes, actually it was. The premise was an organization, and since part of the mystery... I'm not going to go into what it was, because part of the mystery is figuring it out. so I don't want to spoil it. They had gotten all these viruses, and the way they went through, you know, how the viruses were constructed, I kind of wish he explained it a little bit better, because for somebody who doesn't know what's up, they're not going to get it.
Okay.
You know, because it's like the security analyst people are sitting there going, well, I don't get it. It's like, this part of the code is brilliant, and this is like all cut and paste. And when they go into that, it's like, it actually makes perfect sense, and that's actually how you would do that kind of thing. But the premise is basically there's all these variants of these viruses out there, and the malware authors are using rootkits like nobody's business to hide the things and then have them all go off on one day.
Right.
That's the premise. And that's very realistic, actually, because that kind of shit has happened.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, it's like, you know, all what's getting into SCADA systems and medication systems for hospitals and killing people, and, you know, some of the ways that he goes about having a computer virus kill people were actually pretty spot on to what would happen.
Oh, yeah?
That's
cool.
So that part's pretty good. You know, I think my real problem with the book was the characters, actually. They're kind of two-dimensional.
Yeah.
He really tries to make his main character...
It sounds like this is his first novel, hey?
It is. And so,
yeah,
he
might have a lot of potential, but he's got to get some experience in there with the character development.
Yeah, that's my real problem with it, was the characters were... Most of them were very, very two-dimensional. He really tried to make his main character hardcore, you know, give him this hardcore backstory.
Yeah.
But it was a bit over the top.
Right.
It's a good read. I would recommend the book. You can get it in paperback.
Mm-hmm.
But or, you know, ebook, whatever. But
yeah.
It's a good read.
Your public library.
There you go. BitTorrent. No, I didn't say that. BitTorrent over Tor, so you don't get caught. There you go. No, don't do that. Don't run Tor. Please, people, I'm making a joke. Do not run BitTorrent over Tor. You'll make the Tor people unhappy. And we don't want their servers to go away. They're providing a very important service. How else am I supposed to pen test servers without them coming from an IP address that they expect?
Right.
Did I say that out loud?
Yes.
Damn it.
I didn't hear a thing.
Awesome. So, anyways, moving on. I sent you all a link earlier. Did you all see that JavaScript PC emulator?
Yeah, I did, actually. Yeah.
It's a pretty minimal Linux he's got running in there, but
yeah, it's just command line, hey.
Well, it's command line, and there's like nothing there. I mean, it's like a very minimal Linux. Linux from scratch or something too. I couldn't even figure out what distro it's coming from.
It is running over Java, so
JavaScript.
Yeah.
JavaScript, not Java.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
So, I didn't think about this.
So that's it's still pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's like, you know, in the etc, it's just fstab group and password. So I mean,
yeah.
it's running a mildly older kernel, but I mean, this is a PC emulator in JavaScript. That's cool.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't expect it to be too much longer before we start seeing some use come of this. I have no idea what, but if you can run a full PC emulator in JavaScript, this makes me think the network stack is in there. Now, it hasn't pulled an independent IP address. It's just got its localhost. But the network stack is there. You want to talk about browser-based viruses.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And, you know,
yeah, not only that, but just, you know, the ability to circumvent intent of use, you know, or restrictions upon use. And I'm talking specifically about certain websites' use on mobile devices.
Oh, yeah.
But if you could emulate a, you know, regular PCs, then you could circumvent that.
Yep. Mm-hmm. See here. So that's neat. I'm hoping to see some more come of that. It's by the guy who wrote QEMU, so he knows how to write an emulator. So mm-hmm. That's all over Slashdot, though, so we don't really need to cover too much on that.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Ars Technica had an article here. Basically, you know, U.S. government put out its International Strategy for Cyberspace, which I admittedly haven't read. I need to read that. But apparently in there, they Where's the line? I'm looking at the Ars Technical article. Hang on, I'll shoot you guys a link so you know what I'm looking at. I have too many windows open.
Yep.
I only got like 6 screens in front of me and a pad. No, I'm not damaged at all. Why do you ask? Here's the pull line I was looking at in this article. Certain hostile acts conducted through cyberspace could compel actions under the commitments we have with our military treaty partners. When warranted, the United States will respond to hostile acts in cyberspace as we would any other threat to our country. Which, given what we just did in Libya, that would mean we're going to drop bombs on your ass for running a DDoS.
Well, what I'm concerned about there is what's been going on with China. Because, you know, China's... It's been fully documented that they've done this sort of shit.
Oh, yeah.
So...
I mean, are we talking about actually dropping bombs on someone because they hacked a server?
Well, you know, it's kind of like the whole Al-Qaeda, let's bomb Iraq thing.
I think it'd be more along the lines of special forces coming in and, you know, raping your ass, basically. We're going to come in and we're going to take out the
server area. So, like, let's say a small organized group decides to do an attack on the U.S. If they want to send in Marines and take out that specific group, I'm okay with that. But if they do a full-on invasion of the country that the group is based in, I have issues with that.
Well, not... So... Okay. I guess it would depend on whether or not they're state-sponsored or not as to whether or not I would have an issue with
but,
that.
But, you know, how do you know?
Well, that's the real problem. We were just talking about, before the break, what were we talking about? We were talking about a live city that you can't tell where the traffic is coming from.
Yeah.
And so now you're saying, okay, we can't tell where the traffic is coming from, but, you know, you're DDoSing our server, so we're going to send in the Marines?
Mm-hmm.
How does that work when it's really easy to say, you know, one of the reasons a lot of malware attacks come from Russia and China is they have a lot of pirated Windows XP over there, and most of the pirated copies of Windows already have the rootkits in them.
Yeah.
It's like the moment you install them, you're on a botnet.
Mm-hmm.
So those attacks could literally be coming from anywhere with an internet connection.
Yeah.
Even, like, somewhere in the States. So are you going to send in the Marines to take out some, you know, some poor dude in China's, you know, office building because he happens to have a, you know, malwared up PC? Hell, at work, I just go ahead.
I was just going to say, well, you know, these attacks are definitely based on, like, industrialized nations, like nations that have, you know, already have the tech. Because, you know, I'm pretty sure it's not going to be coming out of, some out in the middle of nowhere country where you don't have a good education base, where you don't have a lot of people who really have a good grasp on this sort of stuff.
Well, okay.
Dude, can you imagine the awesome trolling from this? I mean, think about it, guys.
Well,
you could sit there and you could just make it look like it's coming from somewhere, and you hit some piece of infrastructure as quote the bad guys, but it's coming from a certain location that you want to attack, and you're gonna get the best of the best without even having to pay for them, or better than Richard, even.
Think about Stuxnet. We know Stuxnet was state sponsored because you had to have access to those kind of PLC controllers to write that kind of virus. And very few people have access to those kind of things because they're damned expensive. And it's not something you can emulate. Stuxnet was state-sponsored. According to this document, we could consider a military... And of course, later in the document, they say that's a last resort, but, you know, look at Libya. Just to make a point. But, so, are you saying... Is this document saying that from a, you know, we might have a military response to a foreign power trying to do something like Stuxnet? That, to me, that's terrifying, actually.
It is.
Because, I mean, I'm all for going in and taking out the bad guys, don't get me wrong, but I don't think you can tell where the bad guys are coming from all the time. And just, in all seriousness, at work, I had to spend about, 3 days on this, and mostly because it took forever to clone the damn drive. We had a machine get infected with a variant of Zeus. And I know I've mentioned before the Zeus source code has been leaked, so I'm wondering how long before we start seeing all the skitty copycats. But we had a machine get infected with a variant of Zeus. Somebody installed a fake disk defragger, Trojan, and it brought in the Zeus botnet, and the thing started SSH brooding.
Mm-hmm.
And this thing then got in to a SSH server that was poorly secured that belonged to a company that writes Android applications. And their lawyers were the ones that called us because they wanted to file a fucking lawsuit. They wanted to know the name of the person behind that. You know, as soon as they figured out, you know, it was not something where they could go after the institution. It is a school, so they wanted to know the name of the person behind that machine. They wanted to know who hacked them because they were going to file a fucking lawsuit. They wanted to press charges.
Uh-huh.
And so I had to spend quite a bit of time and effort picking apart a hard drive and documenting that the attack was not targeted. It was just, you know, random SSH brooding, which happens all the time on the internet if you look for it.
Yeah.
And, all seriousness, put up an SSH server, just don't have any valid logins, and watch your logs. It is insane the number of attempts you will see at that machine. So we got a hold of their guy, and we found out, the password was a dictionary word, and, you know, it was... But apparently, the reason they were so upset is because when it got into their system, it took over their production, like, I think it was their code warehouse. It took it over and used it to start sending spam. And it sent so much spam, it crashed out their router and, like, got their internet connection shut off. So they were claiming lost revenue and all this other stuff, and it really came down to you all had a shitty password. But, it's like, why would you expose that system to the internet at all? But, So I had to spend quite a bit of time and effort documenting that this was not targeted at them, this was not even targeted at us, this was a botnet. And
dude, that
network.
Was my ultimate security suggestion to my grandmother. Grandma, you need something to do a simple spreadsheet for your rental empire. Take that old 300 megahertz system, and never connect it to the internet. You're 100% secure as long as nobody breaks into your house. There you go.
Well, you know, there's truth in that. You know, the easiest way to secure a system from the internet is not to connect it to the internet. I mean, that's
exactly.
I mean, there's truth to that. You know, that if you really need the system,
it didn't.
Go ahead. Heavy.
Oh, I think we lost him.
We lost Heavy. If you really need the machine...
I was going to say, it would eventually die and we ended up replacing with something much newer. Am I here?
Yeah, you're there. It's just massive delay there.
Sorry.
Yeah, you're all right. If you really need the machine to be secure, fill the Ethernet port with epoxy, bury it in concrete, and unplug it and put it in the backyard and hope nobody digs it up. And even then, it might be safe. I mean, it's just like, I don't know. But my point is...
Yeah, but in her case, it was rental agreements and you know, printing out bills, so I'll, you know, connect it to a printer and that's it. I mean, you know, there's a lot of that application in businesses, even, where they could just run a local area network. They don't even have to connect to the internet. It would be fine.
Well, you know, it's an HR problem, but, you know, when it comes down to it, you really can go into most businesses and ask... You know, who all has connection? Who all has internet access? Everybody. Who all needs internet access? These three people over here. I mean, it's, you know, you know, you can do that. And of course, you piss people off because everybody loves having internet access. But
You got to have your Facebook.
Yeah, so I mean, think of
production. And you know what? That's fine. Tell them to bring their own laptop and pay for their own connection.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, well, and that's true too. You know, how do you control what people post on? That's an entire. We're out of time. We can do an entire show on security and. You know, I can talk
internet
for hours on that one. You know, Facebook and everything else.
Yep.
But it's like, you know, well, just to finish out the thought, you know, how do you control what your employees post on Facebook at home? It's like I'm sitting here trying to be careful about what I talk about from work because they're great stories, but, you know, some of that stuff, like I don't want to state the name of the management software that I popped so easily for lots of reasons. One of them being I don't want to be the one who divulged to the world what we're running. So, you know. So
well, not only that, but there's a liability issue because they're going to claim, "Oh no, you're wrong," and blah blah blah, and then so that's not
exactly.
To say.
So that's why I don't want to go into too big of detail of what all happened, like with that attack. But I had to put quite a bit of work into that and write up a full report. Pain in the ass. But like I said, that was a case of somebody else from the outside got into that machine, admittedly through the actions of a user who didn't know to not run the fake hard drive utility. But it was a shared machine, too. Like, six different people used that machine. And, you know, that we got a call from the lawyers wanting to, you know, who do we sue here? So... I'm just imagining if the response wasn't a phone call from the lawyers, but the Marines kicking in the door. Yeah. You know, I like the Marines. I think most of them are probably good guys, but I'm a little bit worried when they're using, you know, cyber attacks. Oh, damn it, no, I just did it. Cyber is for cyber sex. Any other use of the word is incorrect. Everybody,
sir, you're
going
to need to point me to where to put this fire team to lay down that suppressing DDoS attack.
So, okay, we're going to wrap up the show there. We are over time, and so I thought that was a good one, guys. Thanks for being on the show.
Yeah.
I'll just close out with a little bit of patient zero here. I think this is appropriate. Let me mute this call and myself.
I'm a slave to absurdity.